Welcome back to the Brew Theology Podcast. Well, at Brew Theology, we don't just pour drinks. We pour passion into every conversation. Join us for discussions that ignite your curiosity, fuel your soul, and leave you with a heart full of inspiration. Cheers to the passionate pursuit of wisdom and great brews. Today, I'm drinking a coffee because it's and today, Janelle is going to introduce our guest with a lot of passion, a lot of gusto. This is very exciting. This is, I say, less theological, although all things are theological, and more personable, tangible, if you will.
All right. Well, everybody, we are so happy today to introduce you to Tighe Taylor, who is the founder and executive director of Holy Kicks. Tighe founded Holy Kicks in November 2018 after a curious conversation in an alley with a man wearing a bow tie who reflected with him about what it means to walk in the shoes life has given to you. Tighe grew up in Steamboat Springs, attended Colorado State University and Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary in the Bay Area, before landing in Monument, Colorado for 28 years as a pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church. During his time in Monument, Tighe spent many years working amongst those experiencing homelessness in Colorado Springs. Tighe's experiences of visiting homeless camps, hanging out in the park and at low-rent motels, learning the systems and cultures of the homelessness, creating friendships and developing leaders amongst the community of those living outdoors and on the street, led to the vision of moving to North Aurora to work as a street pastor along Colfax, working with other nonprofits and the development of Holy Kicks. Holy Kicks asks the questions, who are you walking with? Tighe loves spending time on the street in North Aurora and East Denver, meeting new faces and kindling relationships with those whom he has met over the years. Tighe's greatest joy of leading Holy Kicks is creating leaders right from those experiencing homelessness to run new shoe events. Tighe sees his life as a mission to walk with others, using his heart, his experience and relationships, his truck and resources, his boldness and trust, his limitations and possibilities to live a life that serves and loves others. That is a pretty amazing bio there. And we're so happy to hear your story today and share that with our listeners. So usually we start out Brew Theology with just a quick summary of our spiritual journey and giving ourselves kind of a spiritual label of where we're at. So what is your label and how did you get there?
How did I get there? Yeah, I really say now the church is my street and I barely believe in anything anymore except that people matter and God's love works through us. And that's really the summary. Everything's been stripped out. Growing up in Steamboat, I went to a Missouri Synod Lutheran church and was active always and mostly just trying to go skiing after church was over. And yeah, I've always had, kind of chops for church life and community. And I loved being in the parish. My plan was to go to medical school. I spent a lot of time in the hospital as a kid, and I was kind of fascinated with medicine. I got to college at Colorado State, realized I wasn't smart enough to be a physician, although I raised one. That's the good news, I guess. But I was going to drop out of college, maybe pursue a life in acting and comedy. I used to be funny. I'm not really anymore. But yeah, and I had a crazy call experience at the end of my freshman year in college. And I was like, I think I'm supposed to be a pastor. And everybody thought it was a joke, actually. And Tighe, there's no way you're going to be a pastor. And people still sort of think that now. And I actually had a little speaking engagement about 2 weeks ago. And somebody said, yeah, Tighe was at my church. He's a little unconventional and uses non-pastor words. And that's kind of the way I've always been. And it hasn't always worked out perfectly. And I've frustrated some of the systems along the way, but just try to be myself along the way. And I did love serving in the parish. I had a beautiful staff and a great church and folks that cared about the community. And maybe 8-10 years before I left the parish, maybe about the 20-year mark in, I realized that I was a pretty good cheerleader trying to just get my church to redirect to live a more missional life. But I realized if I wanted to change the direction of my church, I had to change my own life. And so I started pressing in harder to just stop hanging out occasionally with folks on the block and just picking up hitchhikers and having random experiences. And I started to develop some rhythms that developed into relationships and where I created leaders on the street and created some missional communities that loved people experiencing homelessness. And I'm good at doing things alone. And what I realized is I had to start actually trying to replicate what I did in the world And that really bore some great fruit. And eventually that led to kind of my frustration of just being in the parish though, and feeling like I wanted to have more of a full-time missional life and get out of church leadership. And not that I didn't like that by any means, I was actually fairly good at it. But yeah, my wife got super sick one day and she died. And it gave me this curious gift to not have to worry about anybody but myself. And I'd been in my church long enough, I didn't look like a quitter after 28 years. And yeah, I just started without really a plan. My church greenlighted me to work as a street pastor, though I guaranteed them absolutely nothing except for love and presence. And then they decided they couldn't afford it, really. And then I had to get a job with another nonprofit before I even got to the street 5 years ago, and had a vision for Holy Kicks before it all started, and the day I tried to buy a house in the hood. And it's been a little bit of progression. And so I quit my nonprofit job a handful of months into COVID to go all in with mostly all in with Holy Kicks. I retired officially from the ELCA last year, and after 32 years, because I felt like I was a little bit owing to the church. You know, if somebody wanted me to come out and preach or lead worship, I felt like I had to thank them for paying for my insurance, you know, and I did that sincerely, but I really wanted to be 100% in with Holy Kicks. And so I kind of left a lot of that behind in order to go all in with Shoes and Feet and Kids and People on the Street.
So some of our listeners may not know this because they're not from the Mile High City, haven't spent time there. Tell us about Colfax and why that road matters to you, and how does it continually matter to you, present day Denver? I don't live in Denver anymore, but I am aware of Colfax.
Yeah, it's famous for a lot of things. It's the, supposedly the longest continuous street in America. They run a marathon it every year. It's literally about 30 miles start to finish, and there's barely a turn in it. It's almost straight. And up and down it for about 20 of those miles are lots of motels where 50, 60 years ago, people used to travel, and that was the main highway through Denver. And people would vacation heading to the mountains and Estes Park. But now those hotels are full of people that are barely making it economically. Some live in them full time. It is a horrible system of poverty. You get charged to live in a Colfax motel. If you pay a day rate, it can often be $70, $80, which is about what you get paid for day laboring. And no one can afford a week's rent. No, you can't save up enough. You can't get $400 to pay a full week at a time. So you pay daily. And you might get a friend or two to live there. If you're a young woman who works the street, you might get a friend who will put you up for the night for a favor. And kids are raised in those motels. People live there. And I still go to comedy clubs, and comics love to come to Denver and make fun of Colfax. And it's funny, except it's not funny, because Colfax is full of people that are just trying to live. And about 2 years ago, a gal told me something that really struck me. And she said, Colfax is like a knife. No matter if you cross it enough, you're going to get cut. And literally, people cross Colfax not at the lights. In my part of town, East Colfax, just east of Denver in Aurora, it's a dangerous street. People are hit on it. People in wheelchairs, if you got diabetes and missing a foot, you literally roll your chair backwards in the middle of the street and block traffic. And people are high or drunk, or it's tough. And then there's people just trying to walk with their children across the block to get to services. It's full of a curiosity of, from the outside, people think it's dangerous, but it's, there's only danger I find in the world is if you're up to it. And I spent a lot of time on Colfax. I've never been stabbed or attacked or I've been in altercations, verbal, but that's mostly because I don't back down. And sometimes I go a little too far, but it's a tough place full of poverty that's been pushed in from gentrification as well.
And so you continually have decided to, that's where you live. That's, you're not leaving it. It's stayed with you. Like most people, they left it. You don't seem scared. You don't danger is your middle name, so to speak, right?
Yeah, a year ago, I moved out of the hood. I live literally a block. I live probably 200 yards closer to Colfax than I used to when I lived in North Aurora. Love got me out of, grief got me out of, got me to Denver, I guess, and love got me out of the hood. I bought a house with my partner not far from there, and still lots of curious things. But I would say my neighborhood is a little more high rent for sure where I'm at. but I still spend lots of time on the street, and I literally can walk a block and interact with folks. Yeah, I do spend a lot of time there. Holy Kicks has meant that I spend less time on the street and more time in schools and prepping and leadership. Yeah, it's the nature of missional life. Sometimes you got to stop something to start something. Eventually here in a handful of years, if I can retire, my plan would be to walk Colfax every day, but just trying to say yes to what's in front of me. But yeah, I love the things Colfax has, but it's culturally really difficult too. You can't just go where you want to go. You have to be a little welcomed in and
So what started on that street obviously has helped create this ministry, and you've been going now for how many years? Three, five?
Well, 5 years since I'm 5 years since I met Rodney, the guy in the bow tie. But it's been, it wasn't until April 2019 when I gave away my first kick, but really it's been the last 3 years we've gone super hard, where we've given over we're close to 16,000 pairs of shoes that we've given away so far.
Well, tell us a little more about Holy Kicks and what all that entails, and just let us in on it. What are you doing?
When we originally got going, the plan was just to give shoes to folks experiencing homelessness. But what happened is I got going and just barely able to have any kicks in stock because I didn't have the money to do it, and trying to convince people we could be a thing. People with children kept approaching me and saying, hey, my kids need shoes. Sometimes it'd be people living in motels, or some schools started to say, could you come here and give shoes? Our children need shoes too. And my answer at first was always no. You know how hard it is to get a men's size 8? That's hard to find one men's size 8 that somebody wants to give away. But I kept just thinking, you know, where is the greatest need that we can address, and what would be the most helpful? And so it really turns out that much of the most helpful work that we can do is often with elementary schools and preschools, because parents are so up against it economically. And so let's say a person experiencing homelessness, we can toss out one pair of kicks that somebody can come and choose. Last week, we're at a place called the Aurora Day Resource Center, a place that supports people living in the cars and outside. And we did 65 pairs of shoes in an hour, super easy. Folks come in, we don't have to mess with them much. They pick their shoes and we high five them and love on them. But that's pretty quick. And somebody can get a pair of shoes just like that. But when you're a grandmother raising five kids because you're a daughter might be working all the time, or your son-in-law is incarcerated maybe, and the pressure is so high. And so to come in and hook up a family with three, four pairs of shoes at a school or at an event with another nonprofit gives a real break to that parent in the moment, that they can afford what they need. And I'm constantly saying no to organizations now that say, hey, could you come here? We're doing this. And I'm like, no. So this year we'll give away 6,500 pairs of shoes just in 2023. And that's 1,500 more than I thought we could handle. So we're finding we have to say no, because as people hear about us, we just don't have the capacity to make it happen. I'm like a one-man show with hundreds of volunteers.
Man, it seems like a good problem to have in a lot of ways. So that's so inspiring. Your story, your ministry is very inspiring. And I just want to pause and say thank you. Thank you for this example. I know you don't want to take credit for it, which is the beauty of it as well. So I wasn't there, but I did. I think I was listening online when you came to the pub in Denver. It was during COVID. I just moved to Waco, and this is a few years back. And you kind of walked through your own alignment, purpose, abilities, and interests. So could you kind of build that mental Venn diagram of that process?
Yeah, it's funny. When Janelle reached out yesterday, said, hey, do that little diagram. I'm like, uh-oh, what did I do? I never save a note, a book. I always say I just sort of do stuff and get rid of it, but I wouldn't say stuff. And I was like, oh, actually, I do remember that. It was kind of an old 3DM. I did some training with 3DM discipleship, which I was a big fan of, and people just trying to do something a little bit different and redirect. And I think I stole that. I always think nobody really has their own idea. You just twist what somebody smarter did than you. And I'm never at the top of the smart list. And I think what I did was this three circles, where first you would think about the problems of the world. What are the things that just get under your skin? And those could be the systems, the situations, the social issues, the anything that's maybe causing suffering or frustration or less hope than you think it should be. And literally, you can just list out into that place as a tool. The goal is to find your missional sweet spot. You'd lay out all those things. And so for me, it's systems of welfare and social services and incarceration and gentrification, all these things that lead to poverty that I found frustrating over the years. I just saw it. I didn't know how to do anything about it. It could be right now, there's multiple wars going on. I'm sure there's plenty of folks that listen that have all this justice issues for things like that that you could put in. So then, so that's kind of the problems. The other place would be your passions. What are the things that you are just fired up about in the world that are maybe unique to you, maybe you share with other people? So brew theology, maybe hanging out in pubs, palling around with friends, a great IPA. It could be anything from, I love to cook. That's something I love to do. So I could put anything from, I just bought an overpriced stove the other day. I'm like, okay, I'm going to torch that thing up here and burn things on my stove pretty quick and flame things that go to the ceiling. You know, what is it that makes you tick? And if you're a sneakerhead, you throw down, hey, I just love shoes. I love cool sunglasses, whatever it is, you can throw that down. The other thing is then are your resources. And that's in the third spot of the diagram, your resources. And those are everything that you have access to. So that could be your bank account, your vehicle, your home, your personality, your listening skills, whatever it is that makes that you say, hey, I'm pretty good at that. You know, so for a guy like me, like a Colfax, I'm super brave. I'm like super gutsy. I'm kind of fearless about things. And so I'm like, hey, I'll walk in anywhere. And what is that about you that makes you? One of your resources could be, hey, I think through things carefully. I'm timid. That could be a resource to you because you pay attention better to idiots than me who just knock things over sometimes. And then you kind of look at those three things and figure out what are the spots that hit everything right in the middle. That if there is a problem that's under your skin, let's say if it was incarceration, let's just say, and one of your resources is you have Thursday afternoons free. That's a resource, right? Hey, I don't do anything on Thursday afternoons except to wander around and, you know, enjoy life. And then the other place is that you've got passion for something. And maybe that passion is listening. And you're suddenly, oh my God, there's people in prison on Thursday afternoons that need to listen to. And suddenly you say, oh my God, those are three things that match up. You know, so often people are trying to look at where could I volunteer or what could I do? Who needs me? And sometimes starting with the who needs me, you need to start like, what am I built from? What are my resources? And what do I have unique in the world that somebody else might need to access where I can change the trajectory of life a little bit and bring some joy and love or ease or some hope? And you can use that little tool with just about anything, but I find for finding kind of your missional outpost, it's a really good way to go.
So can you walk us through how did that work out for you as you were making this transition and, you know, getting into this new phase of ministry? How did this all start to line up for you?
Yeah, Janelle. So for me, this vision with Rodney, I'll just stick with just Holy Kicks. I wanted to work on the street. I remember, well, I had done my ELCA paperwork, which I assume every church body is the same, but Lutherans love books and writing. And so they make you write about enough nonsense to sell yourself on paper. And I had written all the things that I don't believe in there, all the things I don't do. I'm like, I don't even own a Lutheran book of worship. I've burned all my souls years ago. And I'm like, hey, here's the two things I'll do because I needed a job and I didn't think I wanted to quit my call of whatever that looks like. And I said, I'll either go to a church that wants to turn upside down and just be focused actually on their neighbors, or I'll go to a church that wants to shut down and turn it into a bastion of nonprofit support in the community. And my bishop said to me, Tag, what do you really want to do? Just tell me. I said, I want to work on the street. And they said, okay, go. And that just gave me freedom. And freedom was to listen in a different way. And when Rodney said to me, what he actually said, I don't post this online, it depends on the group I'm talking to, but what he actually said was, I always wanted to walk in the shoes that Jesus walked in, but I suppose you can only walk in the shoes that Jesus gives you or that God gives you. And in that moment, I'm like, I think I'm going to start a shoe nonprofit. And what for me, that place of what people give them is we really love walking with people, both supporting, mentoring, and loving folks, both our leaders and folks that we work with that need new kicks. I built Holy Kicks to empower people to empower other people. So if we go the other day when we're at the Aurora Day Resource Center, on one hand, Holy Kicks shows up and we got a cool trailer and it's branded and I'm there with some of my buddies helping out. But ultimately for me, the mayor of Aurora came by and spent a little time with us that day. And people are mad at him right now because they supposedly Aurora wants to stop some funding. And for me, I'm always like, how can we empower somebody else to do what they do? My job is not nearly as painful being the mayor of Aurora, but how can we set up the mayor in that moment to just make a difference? Or the workers that actually work at Aurora Day Resource Center every day, just to get a pair of kicks for their clients to make their life a little easier, where they can actually walk back and forth maybe and just enjoy life a little bit better with their feet. And so when we go to a school, on one hand, you know, our volunteers could come and be like, oh my gosh, I helped that 8-year-old pick out a pair of sparkle shoes and she actually loved them and she was so happy. But for me, I'm like, hey, what did we do for that parent? That parent, they don't have to buy a pair of kicks for the kid. That's $20 they have to pay for the rent or some food or gas in their car. And the joy looks like it's the child, but ultimately, I always think it's maybe, you know, it might be the next step beyond. It's a break for somebody else, or it's a school social worker or a principal that says, oh my God, we just got 200 pairs of shoes for these children. That is a break for that school where they've got a little more joy and kids' feet that feel better. So I was trying to think of taking it beyond ourselves, not to just the feel good moment.
Thanks so much for listening to part one of our interview with Tige Taylor, as we learned about his ministry, Holy Kicks. We'll come back next week and finish it up with some great stories. And you might have heard his little clip in December about their Santa event. So we'll also cover that in the next episode. If you have any questions, please reach out to us at brewtheology.org. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at brewtheology and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at brew_theology. We hope you enjoyed the show and we hope you'll join us again next week. Thanks. I also wanted to add in a few quick notes. If you're in the Denver area, we have a Soul Brew event coming up on April 4th, where we'll be interviewing some of the people that you've heard on the podcast before, Rabbi Stephen Buthnadov, Reverend Diana Thompson, and Pastor Nathan Hoeg. During Soul Brew, we'll be interviewing our guests to talk about how they develop their own internal spirituality and then how those things influence the way their community develops. We'd love for you to join us for that live podcast event and look forward to listening to that on the podcast in the future. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to Thomas J. Ord, who you've heard on the podcast, and Trip Fuller are bringing two events to Denver, April 11 through 13. Persuade is a preaching conference using open and relational theology, and they're also doing an event called God After Deconstruction. You can find both of those events on Eventbrite, where you can sign up for tickets. So we hope you'll get a chance to participate in some of this, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Cheers.